fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 2 of the Johnny and Josh Show. Now, Big David's got a flight to catch, so we're going to have to crack on. Always a pleasure to welcome my baseball brothers, Big Dave, JC, and Eric. Boys, are you well?
Goldie?
Good to see you.
Nice to see you, Goldie. How's your wife and my kid?
You know, you're not the only person who said that line to me on numerous occasions. Anybody think I was a player, boys? Nothing could be further from the truth.
Copy that.
Yeah. All right, moving on already.
Awkward silence.
There wasn't that.
Right from the get-go. I'm already ringing the bell. So, yeah, I've got the waffle today. So if you guys start waffling, for those of you new to the show, I wield this waffle whenever the guys are waffling, which has been wielded many, many times over the past 3 seasons. Moving on.
But you end up eating it before we get done waffling, usually.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
It's the most irrelevant prop in the history of podcasts. Right, we're going to have our usual biblical reference, guys. It's episode number 2. It's a very special number. And as we all know, it is the number of dualism. It's ruled by planet Moon, belongs to the zodiac sign Cancer. And people born between 2, 11, 20, and 29 have number 2s in their life path number. It's a blend of both positive and negative, loss and gain. Or in plain words, male and female. And that's perfect for this podcast because I'm the positive, you guys are the negative. I'm the slim one, you're the ones putting on weight. And we all know I'm the
ultimate
male.
What are you talking about? I lost 2 kilos.
Dave, you do look good. I got to say, buddy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, it could be further from the truth. In fairness, I have been putting on some more weight. But thankfully, this is not a visual medium unless you're watching us on YouTube. Anyway, guys, it's a special number. And as always, it's a joy to have you guys join me on episode 2 of season 3 of the Johnny and Josh Show.
Woot, woot.
You know what I want you to do, Goldie, because I just want to see your acumen, is we have a list of number 2s who played in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
I want you to pronounce the first name. I just want to see if you know how you pronounce it.
Tommy Lasorda.
No, that wasn't the first name. That's the third name.
That's the first one on my list.
Okay, the one that starts with whose nickname was Red.
Okay, Charlie Gehringer.
And then the other one?
I think it was Derek Jeter. He was another number 2. Yeah, decent one.
Red Shane Deans.
Well, I was just going to call him Red.
Can I just tell you, I never got that right. I always call him Schadenheist.
No, Shane Deans.
I know.
St. Louis Cardinals.
I can't do it.
Middle infielder. Great player.
And a great manager, correct?
And you know the most significant number 2 that's not even on that list? Chopper Harris, Chelsea Football Club, 1970 FA Cup winners.
Give me a break.
I don't remember him playing Major League Baseball.
Yeah, how was his baseball career? It's about as good as yours.
The notable 2. Does it say notable 2s who played baseball? No, it doesn't. It says notable 2s. Talk to the producer who wrote the script.
I've already got the waffle out. I'm waffling on now. Moving on.
Good Lord.
Okay, COVID update. So far, so good. Everybody's got it. No one seems to care. Are the Canadian borders open?
Canadians, sort of. Borders open. The New York Yankees will be traveling north of the border to be playing the Blue Jays. But with Aaron Boone being so cagey about, is he jabbed? Isn't he? Will he be in the Yankees?
Aaron Judge, you mean? Aaron Judge, not Aaron Boone.
Oh, I say Aaron Judge. I beg your pardon. Got my Aaron's mixed up. Aaron Judge.
Are you Johnny Gould in disguise, Eric?
Sorry?
Are you Johnny Gould in disguise?
Aaron Judge, who's been cagey about his jabs, will he or won't he be playing in the Yankees lineup when he gets to Toronto?
That's going to be so interesting.
Exactly. We've already seen the advantage that the Blue Jays have when you have players on opposing teams who refuse to get jabbed, with the Red Sox, who had a 4-game series there, and Tanner Houck. You know, if it's a 3-game series and a pitcher, you might be able to work around it, but Houck was supposed to start the second game of that series. He didn't go on the trip. The Red Sox were pretty thin pitching-wise. They brought up some guys from the minors. But it had an impact on that series. So I think we had discussed in the first show how the Blue Jays may have a little bit of an advantage. I think it's already.
And with that in mind, JC, I've been in touch with the management team at Atlanta, because obviously we've had a bit of a horrific start to the season. And I've said, guys, can we not just as a Georgia state impact a rule of our own, saying that we're not allowing anybody that's not jabbed into Georgia, and then every Atlanta home game, we get the same advantage?
Yeah, that's going to work in Georgia, Goldie.
They're very open to these suggestions. I'm
yes, yeah. Like it's Johnny Gould.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway, maybe they're not aware of the Johnny and Josh show. For those of you listening, you obviously are, but please do big up our social media presence. YouTube videos are back. Eric spent many a long hour, and we love him for it. So do check out our YouTube channel. And of course, we want you to subscribe and like. So hit the buttons that are apparently at the bottom of the screen.
Hit the subscribe button. It takes this amount of time. Ready? One. That's how long it takes to click subscribe or like.
That was so fast.
On YouTube or so they, even like Twitter. You know, just like follow us on Twitter.
Like sheep.
Exactly. Moving on.
Moving on, Eric. Trivia. What are we doing?
Trivia. We have today's trivia because we are in the month of May now, and in 1941 there was a certain Joe DiMaggio who started his famous 56-game hitting streak. In May of 1941. So my question to you gentlemen is, in honor of Jolton Joe DiMaggio, which one of these players has had the highest hitting streak since the turn of the century, i.e. since 2000, obviously. Now, you know, since Joe DiMaggio hit 56 game as a hitting streak, Pete Rose was the only one who came close with 44 in 1978. But since the turn of the century, which one of these players have come the closest? Was it A, Chase Utley? Or was it B,
Phillies?
Jimmy Rollins.
No.
Another Philly.
Phillies.
Or was it C, Dan Ugla?
Dan Ugla. Oh, my
or
God.
Or was
Remember
it
him?
D, Ichiro?
I knew there was going to be an Ichiro in there.
He's back.
Four choices there. Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, Dan Ugla, or Ichiro Suzuki. Which one of those four has had the highest, longest hitting streak since 2000? Moving on.
So answer, Ichiro, not Tsuyoshi Shinjo. We're talking about Ichiro now.
Ichiro, correct. Okay. So answer later on in the show. Moving on.
Okay, it's the news roundup. It's always our lead-off batter. And first up, we pause for our very sexy sound effect. Well, plenty to talk about since our last episode, but we'll just broach the big stories and get the view on the boys. First up, that man, sadly, you can't hold him down. Trevor Bauer. He's back, but he's not back. They've finally made
it. Back in the news, you mean?
He's back in the news. He's been suspended 324 games, which you may notice is a rather odd number, except it isn't, because it's two full regular seasons. 162 times two is 324. So he's out for 2 years.
It's actually an even number. It's not an odd number.
So. Yeah, absolutely. But what's interesting is it's not being backdated, because obviously he's not played since... Well, pretty early on in last season. So they're not taking that into account. It's as
no time
now.
Served.
Yeah. Which seems a bit of strange because, I mean, Josh, you're the legal brain here. I mean, if you're sitting in custody for a year and you get sent down for two, surely the first year counts towards the two. So from a legal perspective, it seems a bit odd.
Well, the reason for that is that he's going back to Major League Baseball and asking them to review it again. So if he had have taken his punishment, it may have been a completely different situation. It's a really very difficult story to discuss. A, if you have read any of the details of what he did and the physicality and the domestic abuse with these women, you know, allegedly multiple women, but one who actually press forward with criminal charges that he was exonerated for. Exonerated is not the right word, actually. The real word would be that he was not found guilty. The district attorney ended up taking the charges back, saying that they didn't have enough evidence to move forward. Look, it's hard to argue that Trevor Bauer is not an odious personality. He's just a guy who just, he courts controversy. He just looks, you know, he's like Elon Musk-esque in his online personality, just like really in your face. However, I think the one question you have to ask about all of this is you look back at previous domestic abuse sanctions by Major League Baseball, and this dwarfs any other one. Sam Dyson got
Ozuna, Chapman.
Yeah. Domingo Herman. There are so many examples where it's been from 20 games up to a year. This is 2 years. And if this is the way Major League Baseball is going, if they are going to now have sort of this this type of policy, and every player gets 2 years, fine. If that's their sort of new approach, but right now it feels very selective. And again, Trevor Bauer, odious personality. He's refusing to step down. He's appealing. You know, he's not willing to have any sort of contrition in the acts that he's had. And so I think Major League Baseball is really dropping the hammer. But all that said, again, you need to have continuity and consistency. That's what law is, right? Is that you can't selectively apply it to people you don't like. You know, justice is blind. And if it's not being blind here and he's being treated differently from all these other people, you have to question whether this is appropriate.
I think a good question would be, do you think MLB went high with the idea that the union is going to file a grievance and, you know, they're willing to take a year on it? So they'll go two looking for a year.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, again, one of the things that happens is if you appeal, you sort of lose that ability, because the whole point of trying to diminish appeals is that they don't want everyone appealing and then gumming up the system when you have these sort of situations. So if he loses the appeal, they don't have any position. He has no position to try and bring down the number. So there's a lot of tension there right now. And I don't know how he's going to win the appeal, right? Because you're looking at what they put up. I don't know what new information is going to come to bear to change the situation. And effectively, it's going to be the end of his career, right? Because it will go through the end of his contract with the Dodgers. And I mean, if ever there was a player who was toxic to Major League Baseball in the current environment, it would be Trevor Bauer.
I think my point was more, you know, how does the union feel about this? And will the union fight on his behalf as a grievance to try and lower the suspension, not outside of the appeals process?
I mean, I'm not certain, Dave, and my inclination based on how the union's been willing to keep on pushing his suspension, or I guess his administrative leave throughout this period, and agree with Major League Baseball to give it more time, makes me think that they may not really be in his corner. But, you know, I don't know what's going behind closed doors.
Maybe they're just trying to, you know, trying to get him paid for a little while longer and then call it a day. Because he did make over $30 million last year, and he's made, you know, a couple of million this year.
But he makes nothing now from this first forth while this suspension is being served. Yeah, he's on nothing. I mean, that I have any sympathy, and it's not as if he's struggling for money. Can I just ask you very briefly, is there any connection here? Is there any parallels to be drawn with Curt Schilling's non-election to the Hall of Fame? Because my understanding is Schilling has never been tainted by the whole drug issue. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So therefore,
Schilling has never been done for, you know.
No, but he's never been a part of the discussion either in terms of being under suspicion. Therefore, him not reaching the threshold to be voted into Hall of Fame was all about personality, it seems, because most people find his views rather toxic in the same way they don't want to be associated with Bauer. Is there a parallel to be drawn? And yet again, you ask the question, is that the role of the baseball writers to determine whether they like someone? Surely they should be just voting him in on the basis of his numbers.
Well, I mean, that feels mildly tortured, Gouldy, only because you have a totally different body of people who are determining this, right? Right. Hall of Fame are the writers, as you pointed out, whereas this is Major League Baseball. This is setting a much more...
But they're in tune with each other. If that is, if I'm right, if that's the reason why Schilling...
But yes and no. I mean, I don't think that Bauer... I mean, I think Bauer has exacerbated the situation with his personality, but it's his actions that, you know, that are domestic violence, which is different than Schilling. Schilling a heavily conservative bent on how he approaches things, and said some things that were pretty crazy. But
have you seen
the funny thing about Schilling? I don't want to get into Schilling, but, you know, I think while Schilling was pitching, he was quite highly regarded. I mean, most of the crazy stuff came afterwards. I would say, you know, 90% of the issues that writers have with Schilling came after he retired.
And I should add, sorry, Eric, one thing is that, you know, the domestic violence, the violence involved in this is abhorrent. It's awful. It's just about whether there is continuity in the approach Major League Baseball has, because I've read the stories that relate to some of the other players and what they did. And that was I don't know how you judge equality on this, but that was incredibly abhorrent too. and it wasn't the same level.
Yeah. Will we see the report?
Don't know.
No,
that's. Yeah. I mean, are we? Do you think, as fans, are we entitled to some kind of transparency here, or are we not? Is it none of our business?
Yeah, I'd say none of our business. Move it on, because also one thing as he's been doing, which also has been divisive, is on his own website, he's been trying to sell T-shirts saying "Bring Bauer back," as far as, you know, trying to get public approval that he's not such a bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, the victim angle. Let's
hope that we don't have to talk more about Trevor Bauer in the next 150 odd games. Moving on.
Okay, story number two, a story that we don't need to spend any time on because it's pretty dull and it's pretty irrelevant, and that is the Mets combined no-hitter, second ever no-hitter in Mets history.
Oh, wow.
It took five pitches to put it together. You only have to go on the social media. Unless you're a Mets fan, nobody's getting excited about it. It's an irrelevance. Is this right, David?
Why are you saying those things?
Because I want to wind you up, buddy. I want you to come back at me and be the legend that is David Lengel and get angry.
It doesn't have anything to do with Atlanta's 10-12 record as of Saturday morning, does
it? But have you seen our schedule? Have you seen the monster teams we've been up against? The Reds, the Texans.
Stay on topic.
Look,
Mets combined no-hitter. Let's talk. Go
Mets
ahead,
combined man. No-hitter. All right, look. A lot of fun to watch. It's always interesting when it's the Mets, because the Mets had, you know, they went a very long time without a no-hitter. And so this is the second one. It's a rare achievement. I think there's only been 16 combined no-hitters.
That was the 17th. That's correct.
This was the 17th. And, you know, watching it at the time was exciting. That said, Johnny, to your point, probably one of the shittiest no-hitters of all time. I mean, 159 pitches.
Six walks, buddy. Yeah.
Walks all over the place. So kind of like a fun moment at the time, but lacks the energy and enthusiasm of the individual achievement of a pitcher going through a lineup those times and getting the outs. When it's six pitchers, it's just not the same, obviously.
But let's talk about what it reflects more than anything, which is that hitting is anemic now.
Correct.
I mean, the Mendoza line is like almost league average. I mean, I'm overstating it, right? It's like, I think the league batting average is like 230. People just aren't getting hits. I mean, baseball we could talk about the ball, and there's a lot of discussion that the ball is the worst version of the actual sphere.
Mushy, right? Mushy, yeah. Ball.
Mushy, it's not carrying, you know, you're not getting any grip sort of power. It's like, we're so damned if we do, damned if we don't, right? Everyone's saying, oh, the ball's juice, too many homers. But this result right now is very troubling. And this type of no-hitter is reflective of where we are offensively right now in baseball, which is...
I mean, this is an issue, JC, just simply because, yeah. You know, why did the run for 61 occur with no one drawing questions about how these guys were hitting 60-plus home runs? That's because everybody loved it. Everybody was into it. Everybody was enjoying the long ball. You know, that's what fans go to see. I mean, it's only the real purists that want to see, you know, that prefer a pitching duel. So in a way, Major League Baseball seems to be shooting itself in the foot by juicing a ball the opposite way, to the point where, as you say, hitting's anemic this season.
Let me tell you something, Johnny. I went to the Mets game last night. That was Friday night. And of course, the Mets, who now have the second best record in all of Major League Baseball, believe it or not, behind the Yankees right now as of Saturday morning, who the Yankees who have been hot. And the Mets are tied with the Brewers. I got to see them lose in what probably the worst performance of the season, which is very telling. But the game took over 4 hours, and there was nothing going on. There was no action.
Yeah.
I felt like I didn't see hardly any contact. There was just so little of this.
Did you take personal responsibility? Do you feel that you're sort of the Mets version of Johnny the Jinx?
I have been known to have supernatural powers that affect the outcomes of Major League Baseball games. I think we all know that.
Well, you certainly,
you know, it was a really pathetic Major League Baseball game.
Well, it used to be the three true outcomes, right? A home run, strikeout, or walk. We're now almost to the two true outcomes. You go back to that no-hitter, as we mentioned, six walks, 12 strikeouts. So, you know, I mean, that's so many balls not being put in play and guys getting on.
Yeah, it was bad. And it took a long time. I cannot wait for that pitch clock. I think it's really going to help baseball. We get these games in under 2 hours and we still have the same amount of action. And maybe, you know, maybe pitchers working faster and not being able to go max effort on every ball because they have to keep working and work to a quick pace will help the offense. You got to cross your fingers and hope so.
And so another thing we have to mention as well, since our last episode is, yes, there have been a grand total of 315 no-hitters in the history of Major League Baseball, and that was the 17th combined no-hitter. But we almost saw another combined no-hitter about a week and a half ago when Clayton Kershaw went perfect going into the eighth inning, got yanked by Dave Roberts, and then, of course, there was no combined perfect game.
Right. Have we ever had a combined perfect game?
No.
No.
Okay. I mean, the purists got really lathered up about that one. I know a lot of people were pissed. I had a buddy who I've known for a lot of years who, when I said, look, you know, he's coming off of injury, he had a pitch count, and so be it, you know, if that's what you got to do. And he was by none of it. I'm okay with it. I guess I know that we want to see the perfect game, but even Kershaw, and I know Kershaw is going to toe the company line, but even Kershaw was like, look, I knew what my pitch count was. I knew when I was going to come out of this game.
Yeah, what was he saying for real in the clubhouse or to his wife afterwards?
We'll never know. Moving on.
Okay, let's talk about Badu Watch. A View to a Kill. I mean, is there any point continuing? Because we certainly seem to put the kibosh on young Badu's career. Regular
it
season.
It hasn't stats. Gone as swimmingly as it did last season.
He gets five hits and he's right there. I mean, it's April.
He's got four hits and 36 at bats.
Gouldy, your whole life has been about trying to figure out how to be a front runner. You know, that's just not, you know, we can have guys struggling and we can follow them. We did Weaver Watch. It wasn't like, you know.
But that's so not true. I've always accepted my role. I've always accepted my role as the wingman, as the second, you know, Eric's your best friend. I'm your second best friend. I understand that. I've always been happy with that. I've never, ever questioned my role in life. I mean, I take the same approach in relationships. I was
assuming you're my second. Anyways, the thing is, Akil, for those of you new to the show, we were doing Akil Badu Watch, and we called it A View to Akil. And we're debating whether or not do we continue A View to Akil Badu.
Not if we're killing his career, we don't, Eric. 111 is his average. 179 is on base percentage. We're killing Kadu.
I love that we have impact, Gouldy. That's so Gouldy. It's like I have formulated something in my mind and it affects other people because I'm thinking about it.
Look, JC, I'm the only fantasy baseball manager who not once but twice has drafted a player who's died for real midseason.
I'm going to this waffle now. Now, the thing is, yes, it is early in the season. Akil Badu of the Detroit Tigers could break out of this slump. Do we keep Badu watch? Mm-hmm. However, there are two other players that, you know, we're looking, as David mentioned last show, we're looking for diamonds in the rough or diamonds in a diamond. Or diamonds in a rough diamond.
Diamonds are forever.
We're trying to find those
diamonds in the diamond
out of nowhere, and there are two that we could potentially keep an eye on this season.
Yeah, but only because you've come up with a great strap line.
Exactly. If you that's give all me your the names, need. Johnny, if you will.
Stephen Kwan or Seth Beer, and we've come up with Kwan. You believe it or the Beer necessities? I think that's Eric's personal favorite.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Kwanmia River. I don't know. It's like Stephen Kwan. Jackson wants to enlighten us with Stephen Kwan, what he's been up to, and why potentially we could do Kwan. You believe it as a Stephen Kwan watch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of his. This is my kind of player, right? Really, you know, heavy contact type player. Started the season hitting 800 in the first four games. He's come back down to life. I also support him. I don't know if you followed the story when they were at Yankee Stadium and there were some awful things being said by Yankee fans toward him. Miles Straw, the center fielder for the Guardians, almost jumps into the stands in center field to fight back. And I had a lot of respect for Straw. I love that team camaraderie piece. And again, Kwan's a guy who's not going to be hitting dingers all the time, but he's not going to strike out a lot. I love the contact hitter. So, you know, that's the argument for Kwan for sure.
Can we make an argument for Mr. Beer?
Well, Seth his name Beer is Beer.
The Arizona Diamondbacks.
And if you gave him a hug, you could say, hold my beer.
I'm holding my beer.
We're holding my beer. He's a legitimate prospect, Seth Beer. Not, you know, he's not just a name. I mean, he was draft, you know, he's a first round draft pick, and he's playing very well.
And he came from the Astros, is that right?
I think so. And you know, in a team that has zero offense, Seth Beer is somebody the Diamondbacks really need to play and need to hit.
I want to know the history of that name, you know.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, I was thinking that his name was probably like Seth Beerowitz, and it got changed at Ellis Island.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
I guess
like
you
that.
Could say he's a Diamondback in the rough.
By the way, talking about Badu, you know, you worry about Badu. I think the guy you got to worry about, first of all, the Tigers suck. They're supposed to be taking a step up this year, I think. And second of all, Torkelson, who was the number one overall pick, the guy. I mean, he's batting 190 right now. You want to see a little bit more from him.
But we're seeing a lot of that. Bobby Witt Jr. hasn't really lived up to potential at this point. And a lot of those guys who came up, and we were talking about this, that one of the changes in the collective bargaining agreement allowed, really made it easier for these type of prospects to come up because you couldn't hide them anymore in order to try and manipulate service time. So these guys are coming up, and so far, all, you know, the players who were expecting to be these huge, you know, young prospects, they haven't broken out quite as we've expected.
Yeah. I mean, just to show you how bad things have been in Detroit, Miguel Cabrera has the fifth best batting average on the Detroit Tigers.
That says a lot. Exactly.
So he has a decent batting average, his OPS is 609. So
just to round this conversation off, I do want to ask though, is he the real deal, Seth Beer? Because certainly, I mean, we had a very small, you know, example from last season. I think he only had 10 plate appearances, but he was fantastic. 3 RBIs. I think he only struck out 3 times. He hit a home run, had an OPS of 1.389. So, I mean, really, but obviously that's only, you know, that's 10 appearances. But this season, I mean, he hasn't stopped hitting as the DH. And it would suggest that, yes, he does strike out a bit too much, but that's to be expected for a youngster. Do you think, JC, he is the real deal? Has this kid got a big future?
Yeah, I mean, to David's point, you know, when prospects are drafted that high, there's a reason for it, and that you have the raw skill set to be a major leaguer. And then when you start proving it at the big league level, because a lot of those players, you know, metaphorically and literally swing and miss. But the thing about Beer is he's showing that he has a skill level. The question always with a player like that, because the sample size is still small, is pitchers will make changes to try and find those cold zones in the zone for him. And can he then make the modifications to that?
Because
that's always the sign.
Here's a big swing and a miss so far. How about Jared Kelenic in Seattle? Here's a guy who tore up the minor leagues and was widely expected to be, you know, kind of can't miss. And he's, you know, he's piling up the plate appearances now. He's been around a little bit. And
okay, there's a solution to this. We put it to the vote amongst our listeners. They get in touch with us via email, via Twitter, and they say, do you want to go with Quan You Believe It? Do you want to go with the Beer Necessities? Or do you want to make a suggestion of your own? Follow Dave's lead, come up with somebody else. That is the challenge for the listeners of the Johnny and Josh Show.
Or stick with Akil Badu, right?
Or stick with Akil. Yeah, 100%. I just want to put Akil out. I just want to take the spotlight off him because I love him.
I think we're about to break Twitter.
And on top of that, if one of the viewers can think even of a more clever pun, moving on.
Okay. Up next, batter number 2. It's the Mig Meister, Miggy 3000, as we say, and counting. And the big question, of course, will we ever see another player get to 3,000 hits? Very much a Hall of Fame stat. If you've hit 3,000, you're a guarantee. First of all, guys, you know, JC, what's your thoughts about Miggy?
I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, you look at his career, you look at him now, you think back to when he was with the Marlins, he was a skinny young player. The guy's
and
a
we
pure
were
hitter.
On TV. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah. I mean, he's such a pure hitter. And you saw that with when he got 3,000, you know, the ability to go the other way, the ability to get hits in sort of an old-fashioned style. He's not at this point in his career, the guy who's, you know, rearing back and trying to hit bombs, he's just getting base hits still. And it's a reminder of how you get to 3,000 hits. It's what you do from the age 30 to age 40. That is really the determining factor. There's so many players early in their career who can get to 1,500 hits by the time they get to 30. It's can you get the other 1,500 from 30 to 40? So it's a certain type of player that actually reaches that counting stat. It's not about greatness. It's about durability and longevity.
And the and combining in power, which I don't think is something that we see too often, you know, the 3,000 hits with 500 home runs.
But that's more a reflection early in his career, right? I mean, if you look at his last 4 or 5 years, the numbers have dropped on home runs. We always think of pitchers as the ones who have to really adapt later in their career, right? To go from the power pitcher to being the off-speed guy. When you get, you know, to this point in your career as a hitter, you either go all power, right? You see the averages go and people are still hitting the 20 home runs at 35, but they don't hit for average anymore. We see that a lot. You guys like Albert Pujols even, right? He doesn't hit for average anymore. He can still hit for power. Miggy went the other way, which is, okay, shorten the swing, get the base hits, but maybe I'm not going to hit for power in the same way.
Just talking about, will we ever see 3,000 hits again? I mean, I'm looking at the current active leaders. Robinson Cano's at the top. With 2,632 hits, but he's age 39. Yadier Molina, age 39. Joey Votto, age 38. Nelson Cruz, 41 years of age. Elvis Andrus is an interesting one. Age 33, he's got 1,877 hits. But, I mean, I'm looking at that lot, and I can't see any of that lot hitting 3,000.
Yeah, I mean, I think the person to look at, well, the two people are Manny Machado and Mike Trout. If they stay healthy, right, which have been issues with both of them, particularly with Trout. But those guys are around 1,500. They're right around 30. I think Machado's, what, he's 29?
29. Yeah.
Trout's 30. So, and this comes back to what I was saying before, Gouldie, which is that it's all about from 30 to 40. Can you figure out a way to maintain and have that longevity, which is really one of the things you got to say about Cabrera, which is impressive that he's kept going.
JC, interesting omission on your part. You've mentioned Manny Machado, Mike Trout. I agree with you 100%. But you didn't mention the legend that is and still is and always will be Freddie Freeman, who's on 1,722. So he's almost 300 ahead of them. He's only age 32. If he could progress through 30 to 40, maintain his health and his swing, which certainly the way things are looking at the moment with the Dodgers, he doesn't look to be in decline at all. Could he get there?
I mean, again, yes, 32. So, you know, each year makes a huge difference, right? You're talking about 170 hits per year. So, right.
Yeah.
100. I mean, these aren't 200 hit type guys. So 170 hits that you have to maintain year over year. So that's 340 hits that he's in deficit to the guys that are a couple years younger, right? Because he's 2 years older. So it's the opportunity cost of being older. So I think that's tough. And first basemen generally don't age as well.
You know, I see him falling off a table in a few years. I don't see him aging well at all, even though he's doing very well right now at age 32, which has become older as a baseball player year over the last few years. 32-year-olds. Are kind of like,
but one thing in his favor, guys, that you're not considering is now the universal DH, because he's still in the National League. I mean,
true, that's a good point.
He's not going to get, you know, if he starts to suffer the physical injuries that one might anticipate for a first baseman, he can get some protection. And such as the quality of his swing and the quality of his personality, he's a clubhouse leader. I could see him taking up that role big time. So don't write off the Fred, guys.
Yeah, when he used to tie up rookies and wipe off their eye blacks and stuff like that.
It was all team bonding, Dave. You don't understand. Yeah. You never went to an English public school.
That's Gouldie's version of chemistry right there.
So basically, in conclusion, is this a new era of baseball where the 3,000 hit player is a thing of the past, or we'll find out when we do season 13 of this podcast and we can eat humble pie and see.
We're definitely going to see more hitters.
We'll see 3,000. I don't 300. I don't know, but 300 wins. I don't know, but 3,000 hits. Yeah.
And we haven't even considered the young superstars that have started very young. The Tatis, yeah. How many hits have they got?
Are
they
ahead of eight to ten years minimum. I guess will we see a 3,000 hit? Unlikely, but you never know. Moving on.
Okay, third batter up. It's baseball in Europe. And you, Eric, have just come back from what I assume was a little jaunt over the channel to our lovely neighbours in France, where MLB European Game Development is back. And that, of course, is after a two-year hiatus due to COVID. So that was great news. Rick Van Den Herk. What a great name that is. Rick Van Den Herk. You just know he's muscular and exactly. chiseled. Was on hand to join coaching staff. Eric, how did it go, buddy? You look like you were having fun if your Facebook posts were anything to go by.
It was fantastic being back flying and seeing the MLB Global Game Development Bureau back to its old tricks of trying to preach the gospel of baseball, particularly in Europe. And yes, Rick Van Den Herk, who is a Dutch player, born and raised in Holland, of course, and played in the major leagues, and then made a name for himself in both in the Korean League and in Japan. He's just recently retired, and he's figured he'd give something back to the European baseball community, and he joined us in Toulouse in France in the France Major League Baseball Game Development. We remember Johnny and Josh, we met him in the 2007 All-Star Game in San Francisco, the Futures Game. We plucked him out of the field, and he was so humbled to be interviewed by British television. And he goes, they have baseball on British TV? And he goes, yeah, that's us. Look at us now, though. But anyways, he was such a lovely guy, a genuinely nice guy, and a perfect ambassador for the sport.
And I love the fact that you say he was humbled to be interviewed by us, but in reaction to that question he asked, it was more just bewilderment that there was baseball show.
How professional we are.
Stunned, I think, is probably
what stunned, absolutely.
You guys, really? But no, he is a perfect ambassador for European baseball and the growth of baseball and of course, on this continent of Europe. And then Josh, of all people, of course, knows we've seen it all, Josh, haven't we? Like just how we feels like we've gone 20 steps forward in the past 25 years, but 5 steps back, but we're still further than we were, weren't we?
You see, no one knows more about British baseball and its place in European baseball and the importance of European baseball. Where are we in the scheme of things?
Yeah, you know, I'd actually push back on that a little, Eric. I think that we're seeing real progress at the prospect level. And the way I would determine that is by the number of European players who are going over to the U.S. to play college baseball. And I've seen that develop a tremendous amount over the last 4 or 5 years. When I represented European players for nine years, it was always sort of the side part of it, which is that trying to help players go to junior colleges, go to four-year colleges, because that's where a lot of the real development happens. The thing about minor league baseball when a player gets signed out of Europe is that they're usually raw, they get less time, and you end up getting 1 or 2 years and then getting released. That was sort of the typical MO. But it was harder to get them to colleges because a lot of the colleges would be like, oh, this player's from Czech Republic. I don't know about that, you know. But the precedents that have occurred over the last 5 years has created momentum on that front. And when you get those players right, they have, you know, the 2 years of junior college. If they play well, then they're getting another 2 years at a four-year college. And that's where the real development is happening. Those players come back. And we're seeing more and more of that from more and more countries. You know, we had Italian players. We had some Dutch players. Seen a numerous number of French players now coming out of their academy. We're seeing Swedish players, Czech players. So I actually think that we're, from a prospect level, this isn't a grassroots issue, but more from getting those best players that are important for developing the game long-term, those numbers are growing. And you mentioned Rick Van Den Herk, you know, his dad was very involved in baseball development in Holland as well, too. So you're getting that generational issue that's improving. It's always been there. But when you get greater and greater numbers of people who are that good, and then they pass it down to their children, it will proliferate all the faster. So I'm actually really sanguine at the moment about the development at the prospect level of European baseball.
Yeah, totally. And I'll tell you what, it's been over 12 years now I've been involved with Major League Baseball game development department, their media side. And it is, I've been fortunate enough to see, you know, gone places, Germany, South Africa, like Poland, everywhere, and seeing how Major League Baseball,
Italy,
of course, Holland, everywhere, basically, that even where there's a diamond in Europe, I've pretty much been with the game development department from Major League Baseball, far away from New York, who have amazing coaches, some of who are based here, and I'm just hoping that we, you know, it becomes more and more successful. And because let's face it, Johnny, that MLB actually are really showing their flexing the muscles that they are serious.
Well, absolutely, buddy. I mean, this Home Rugby Derby X, it may not be everybody's cup of tea, but it's, it will generate some interest amongst the kids.
What was that?
Home Run Derby X that's happening in...
I think you mean the Home Run Derby X.
Oh, all right, Derby X. Okay, yes, but in English, it's quaint. That's what.
If you want to explain what the Home Run Derby X is, Johnny, to our listeners and viewers.
Yeah, I mean, it's, no question, the commitment and the announcement of the Home Run Derby X at Crystal Palace Park, which is we're all looking forward to. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I've got to say, guys, I'm excited about it. Anything that looks to sell the game to the kids and to baseball fans over here. And we all know how much we've enjoyed the Home Run Derby as part of the All-Star Game when we had the joy of going on not one but three occasions. And there's all sorts of little extras. It's not just about guys, great big hitters, sluggers, ex-superstars hitting home runs. They're involving fielders as well. And if you catch a ball, there's prizes. I mean, it's fun. And some of the names that I've seen, Nick Swisher, Adrian Gonzalez, Johnny Gomez. I mean, these are guys I'd love to see swinging a bat. Fantastic.
I think that the counterpoint that will be interesting about it is they're also having an influencer. So someone who's like an Instagram, social media type person. I don't know what the baseball skills are there, but they're not going to be at a former major league level. And it will be a reminder, a counterpoint of how hard it is to hit bombs, right? You know, you see a major leaguer hit him in a home run derby and you think, oh, you know, that looks, you know, reasonably easy. They hit it so smoothly. You get the influencer and you're going to see how hard it is to do that as well, too.
And that'll be July 9th in Crystal Palace Park.
Can I rewind for you, JC? You're obviously a proper baseball player. When we were very lucky and honored as part of the Channel 5 baseball show that we used to do on TV, that we got involved with batting practice when we went over for All-Star games and on our baseball tours, etc. I remember going in the batting cage, basically having balls lobbed at me. I would hit it with everything I had, and I'd be lucky to clear the infield. And I used to, and I was perceived to be a big hitter at cricket.
Well, you swung the bat like a cricketer, though. Greg.
Yeah, that was the problem.
You know, you, seriously, it was your mechanics. It's not that you're athletic. That wasn't the issue. It's the mechanics of your swing were not given.
Well, I think we all know that after that.
Donnie Gould is athletic.
No, I threw that 53 mile per hour high heat, you know, right over the plate.
Is out now again. Let's stay on topic because there's other MLB events coming up, Johnny, in the continent of Europe. Is there not?
There is. How exciting is this, guys? We've got the London series coming back. We were all very nervous about that. It is coming back in 2023. Cubs v Cardinals, proper local rivalry. Loving the sound of that. But they're also now committing to a 2024 London series. We don't know yet who the teams are that are going to be involved. As a tip of the hat to our lovely French cousins who are showing a great interest and have a bit of a building baseball heritage. They've got a Paris series in 2025. I quite fancy that. Maybe combining a bit of baseball with a bit of romance. And in 2026, another London series. Again, teams to be announced. So this is MLB, boys. There's no question. And we've been their biggest critics. Let's be honest about this. In terms of their investment over here in the UK and over and in greater Europe in terms of spreading the word. But this finally is, it seems, a serious stance at making the game grow on this side of the pond. Do you agree?
100% Goldie. And I think your point is exactly what I would articulate, which is that we can be critical, but when they do something right, you got to tip your hat. I worried that once the collective bargaining agreement was signed, sealed, and delivered, that the focus was going to be on expansion in the United States and that all this international stuff would sort of go by the wayside until they did that. But the fact that they've committed in this way, it's a huge financial commitment. You got to give Major League Baseball a ton of credit for it.
Yeah, 100%. And you see what the NFL have done and how successful that has been over here and growing the game. By the way, I did an event the other day and I got to interview Jason Bell, J-Bell. You know, the former, was he a linebacker?
Okay. Speaking of Bell.
Wait, can I give a quick shout out, just since we're doing international, to my boy Max Kepler, who is having a great start to his season and this could be his breakout. Finally.
Why is he your boy though?
Because he's German.
Well, but I know, but that makes him your boy.
I love Max Kepler. I think it's so cool that there's a guy who came out of Berlin to play Major League Baseball. I think that's great. I've followed his career. He's got an 887 OPS right now. He's had 5 home runs already for the surprise Minnesota Twins, who are on top of the AL Central Division.
Okay, so we need more Europeans in Major League Baseball, like Max Kepler. Moving on.
Time for the seventh inning stretch. We're all having a stretch here at home. I hope you are as well. And this is an opportunity for Eric to justify being on the podcast. What's your baseball book of the week, Eric?
Well, we are talking about grassroots baseball.
We are.
And one thing I want to give a big shout out to is a fantastic woman called Jean Fruth, who is a photographer, and I wish I had her life. Now, I've been lucky enough to travel around many countries and see baseball grassroots level, places like I said, in South Africa, in Spain, and in Italy and all that. And I've been with Mike Piazza in the middle of nowhere, Italy, and seeing like grassroots Italian baseball. But with Jean Fruth, photographer extraordinaire, has accomplished is grassroots baseball books. And it's like a coffee table book full of photographs. If you know, people say, I'm not much of a reader. Well, in that case, why don't you get Jean Fruth? She has two, but more than just this book, Grassroots Baseball, Where Legends Begin, where she went to Cuba, Puerto Rico, Curacao, Japan, even Oakland. And just
took photos.
Taking photos of grassroots baseball, in the middle of nowhere, Cuba, and it's just absolutely endearing images, photographs of kids in the grassroots level playing stickball in the streets of Cuba, playing in dilapidated fields in Curacao. She's got Hensley Mullins, who's a friend of ours from the show, within the book. And also, she's recently come out with a book called Route 66 Grassroots Baseball, where she actually traveled with her camera along Route 66 and just tried to find anything grassroots baseball related. And if you, JeanFruthImages.com, that's another place you can go and check out her amazing photography.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. She's tremendous. There's some, incredible photographs on her website. She's obviously very talented.
Not only that, but she lives in the Bay Area. She's constantly taking photographs of both Oakland A's and San Francisco Giants. And she gets to go to the Hall of Fame and photograph legends. And basically, she's probably photographed them. She's beloved in the baseball world and photography world. Jean Fruth, Eric's baseball book of the week.
Do you know her, Eric? Have you met her?
Yes, absolutely. She's just a phenomenal person.
Famous line in the movie Moneyball is, how can you not be romantic about baseball? Really, when you think about grassroots baseball, to me, that is the greatest romanticism, right? It's the relationship between parents and their child in sports, or kids just coming together and playing on the street. That is the true romance of baseball. So the book is perfect for that.
Absolutely.
And I love a book that's all pictures.
There you go. Okay.
Moving on.
Moving on to pop culture. When it baseball meets pop culture and pop culture meets baseball. And we are actually going to go back to Johnny's favorite segment. When is music and baseball?
Oh, God.
Last year, I annoyed Johnny. I don't know why Johnny didn't like this particular track that I unearthed. Because what I like doing is finding long-lost songs from yesteryear. And last year, it was actually this ditty from 1954 by Jane Morgan. Remember this song, Johnny?
So bright, and whisper, darling, who do you love tonight? I told him baseball, baseball, the Tigers and baseball, baseball, Ted Williams and baseball, baseball. I love the game baseball, Yankees, Red Legs, Braves, White Sox, Indians, Phillies, Senators, Red Sox, Orioles, Athletics, Pirates, baseball, baseball, baseball.
The only words I could think of all begin with D for that track, Eric. Dire, dirge, dreadful.
Now, I like that Jane Morgan track. And anybody remembers this song from last year? I played at the end of the show. But I figured that because Joe DiMaggio, we were mentioning them early in our trivia question, there's a classic song written in 1941 by Les Brown and his orchestra, sung by Betty Bonney. And it goes something like this.
He started baseball's famous streak that's got us all aglow. He's just a man and not a freak. Jolting Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio, we want you and I.
He tied the mark at 44, July the 1st, you know. since then he's hit a good 12 more, jolting Joe DiMaggio.
Joe, Joe DiMaggio, we want you on our side.
From coast to coast, that's all you'll hear of Joe, the one-man show. He's glorified the horse-hide sphere, jolting Joe DiMaggio.
Joe, Joe DiMaggio, we want you on our side.
He'll live in baseball's Hall of Fame. He got there blow by blow. Our kids will tell their kids his name, jolting Joe DiMaggio.
We dream of Joey with the line from back. Joe, Joe DiMaggio,
we want you on our side.
Okay, one, it's Joe Yankee Clipper DiMaggio, one of my all-time favourite players. That's proper music, Eric. You're finally learning. It's only taking you a season. I love that.
Okay, well, hang on. So it's the same, like, swing...
No, it isn't.
...jazz kind of, like, you know, it's...
It's old school. It's old school with a bit of humour.
Anyways, yes, by Jolting Joe DiMaggio, written, sung by Betty Bonney, who later changed her name to Judy Johnson, by the way. She's only 16 years old when she sung that. Can you believe it? She is still alive to this day at the tender age of just turned 98 in March. And believe it or not, Jane Morgan from the baseball song is also 98 this year. So we have two songstresses.
So write a novelty baseball or sing a novelty baseball song, you'll live forever.
Exactly. And now Jolting Joe DiMaggio came out in 1941. In August 1941, after his streak was broken. And went on to top 10 in the charts, believe it or not, in the U.S. And then a few months later, U.S. went to war after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. So that was the last heyday of...
That year is one of the great... I mean, if you want a great bar argument, is 1941, Ted Williams or Joe DiMaggio. That's just one of the great baseball arguments that you can make. You know, is it Ted Williams hitting 406 or is it the 56-game hitting streak from DiMaggio that's more impressive?
I didn't know this. He holds the minor league hits record as well of 61, as the major league of 56 consecutive games. He hit safely, apparently, in 72 of 73 games. He only played 13 seasons, and only 10 of those were full seasons, and he won 9 World Series rings and 10 pennants.
And that's was he the song, that's greatest? Song written for him about Jolting Joe DiMaggio. We'll be playing that song's entirety after the show. But in the meantime, another reference to that song. If anybody remembers that Seinfeld episode where Kramer goes into a diner and he claims that he saw Joe DiMaggio sitting in a diner and dunk his donut and a coffee. They actually play that song at the end of the end credits. So there's another pop culture reference. Jolting Joe DiMaggio will be played later on after this.
Can I give you one more Joe DiMaggio fact? He was such a class act. He used to wear a tie, jacket and tie, to go to the dentist.
He was a total weirdo. Everybody knows.
I guessed on another podcast that is, We Didn't Start the Fire. It's about Billy Joel and all the different people who are mentioned in that song. And I did all the baseball reference ones. So Roy Campanella, I did the Dodgers winning the 1955 World Series. But I did the one on Joe DiMaggio. I recommend you listening to it, Gouldy, because you'll learn a lot about his history.
Am I right?
Job. He had a lot of issues. I mean, he was a chain smoker. He was an insomniac, but he didn't ever let anyone see him sweat. He was a representative of that silent generation. Very different from Mickey Mantle, who came after him, who was much more like the totem for the baby boomers. So interesting contradiction between the two.
And of course, you know, managed to get married to Marilyn Monroe. How could we forget? Yep. Moving on.
Hang on. By the way, not even close, 41. It's Williams and by like far, and somehow DiMaggio wins the MVP. Yeah. And I understand 56.
We'll grab a couple beers and have that discussion.
We'll have that. I just want everybody to take a look at those 2 years.
1941. Should Ted Williams have the MVP or Joe DiMaggio? We'll discuss over beers.
Dave, can I ask? I'm sorry, Eric, but Dave, can I ask honestly, is this view been tempered by the fact that he's a Yankee and you're a Mets fan?
No, it's all numbers and it's not even close.
Okay.
Dave is going to play the catch at Houston to see the Astros. So we got to move this along. That's why we're going to go straight to the trivia question answer or trivia answer of the question. I asked you earlier, which of these four players has had the longest hitting streak since the turn of this century? Was it A, Chase Utley? Was it B, Jimmy Rollins? C, Dan Uggla? Or D, Ichiro? Who would like to go first?
Well, I'm going to go first because obviously I'm the one that no one expects to get it right. I've just got a little burning feeling in the back of my head that this was a Phillies record. And obviously you've mentioned two Phillies in Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins. And Chase Utley, if I remember right, I think they both led off at certain stages. I'm going with Chase Utley. I'm going with Chase for no reason other than the fact that I just got an inkling that it was a Philly.
And when David Langell, who are you going to go for?
Obviously, Dan Uggla.
Okay. When he was.
How could it not be?
Dan Uggla. Okay. Josh Chetwin, your answer, please.
I mean, Gould, you're in the right place because both of those Phillies had really long hitting streaks, but it was actually, I'm pretty sure, Jimmy Rollins.
No!
I remember when this Rollins thing was going on. It was a fairly big deal at the time.
I'm still going to go
with Dan Uggla.
Well, that makes no sense.
For those of you who used to watch Channel 5 Baseball, or let alone present Channel 5 Baseball, you might remember this event. So, in no particular order, Ichiro, 27-game hitting streak in 2009.
Pathetic.
Dan Uggla. In 2011, he had a 33-game hitting streak.
Ooh. A lot. 33 is a lot.
Chase Utley had a 35-game hitting streak.
Chase, go Chase. Go Chase.
And that was in 2006. And Jimmy Rollins had a 36-game hitting streak.
No!
And if you remember, and now it's all coming back to me, I believe that Rollins' streak kind of came towards the end of the year. So debates started as to whether or not it should count if it overlapped into the new year.
That's
right. It's all flooding back now.
At the end of the 2005 season, he was on 34. And then the 2006 season began. He had two more games and then went 0-0-0. And so it ended at 36.
Eric, can I just clarify that I beat Dave? Yeah. I may not have been right, but I beat Dave. Yeah. Can we just confirm that?
Congratulations, Goldie.
Thank you.
Sure. There's obviously in the country, a lot going on. Inside the Buffon is a great deal of knowledge.
You're both also Rans. Moving on.
Okay, we move on to the final section of the show, which is the mailbag. This is our opportunity to ask you to get involved, because for those of you who did used to watch Channel 5 Baseball back in the day on the TV, we very much wanted to always make it your show. And this podcast is no different. So do get your questions in on the mailbag. You can contact us on Facebook at the Johnny and Josh Show or on Twitter at Johnny and Josh. No reference to Dave, no reference to Eric. Why? Because they don't sell it. They're not the brand. That's the problem. And that's the reality they both have to live with.
We're not sexy enough.
They're not sexy enough. Exactly.
Yeah, you know what they are? They're the secret weapon. So, you know, you kind of stealthy, you sort of hide them and then boom.
Okay, so moving on, I'll be brutally honest, I'm not sure we've got any questions. I'm having a quick look at the Twitter handle. We've got lots of likes to some of the posts that you've made, Eric, but I can't see any. I'll tell you what I do want to pick up on. Joey Votto, who's referencing Miggy getting his 3,000 hits, he sent a lovely tweet. It says, I used to low-key creep your at-bat. I love that. Low-key creep your at-bats in my hotel room every single night after our games. I knew I had to study the best to beat the best. Good luck with your final steps to 3,000. You are a joy to watch. And that's from at Joey Votto, the real deal. How cool's that, guys?
Votto's social media game is strong. I recommended it in our last show, but check out his TikTok. It's like a little weird, which is on brand for Joey Votto, but sublime.
And he's basically the only showing down right now, because that team, you know, anybody who's watching baseball, you know, there was a ruling recently in Cincinnati that said that Cincinnati fans can in fact wear bags over their heads in the ballpark, whereas that was, you know, banned for a little while. So they've won that ruling, and now Cincinnati fans can go back to wearing bags over their heads.
We didn't mention the last show that, well, I did mention that show that this, if Cincinnati can't turn this around this year, they were going to be cellar dwellers. And sadly, we're seeing a bit of trouble at the riverfront in Cincinnati. So
Great American Ballpark.
Great American Ballpark. Yeah,
I know. I know.
Three and 18.
On the riverfront.
What do we got? That's it. I think we're done, aren't we? Twitter, yeah, Facebook. Get in touch. We want to hear from you. Oh, don't forget, we still got the Nat Coombs Show at the NC Show. James and I have just done our latest episode of Fantasy Baseball on the Behind Home Plate. That's at BHP Pod with the fantasy legend that is Mr. James Holden. We've been invited into another one of these fantasy baseball leagues that's been set up by some of the major players in social media. We're top of the table, guys. We're top of the table. We won it last year. We're top of the table.
That's really great.
Yeah. Yeah, stick that one up, yeah. Anyway, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. I don't know how to access any of them, but apparently we're doing all of them. So get in touch, get involved, and be a part of the family. Thank you, Dave, for pointing at the appropriate buttons. Boys, what have you got to look forward to this week as we sign off? Anything exciting?
I'm going to Houston.
He's going to start.
I start a new job tomorrow.
Oh, JC, what's the job, big guy?
Going to be the Director of Climate Communications for the state of Colorado.
Woo-hoo. Wow.
Pension, sounds, baby. Get that pension.
That sounds pretty major, buddy. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, I've been breathing in a brown paper bag ever since I got it. No, I'm really excited. Excited to work on those. It's the issues I've been working on. Climate action's kind of a big deal in my mind. So,
yeah, awesome. And have you got to commute for
whatever reason?
What's that?
Are you working from home? Because I know you've been working from home a lot. Or have you got somewhere to commute to? Got an office?
Yeah, it's going to be a hybrid. I'll ride my bike into work most days.
Oh my God, you're so green. With the environment. You'll be wearing comfortable sandals next. I'm loving
it. Well, I've got to go ride my diesel to the airport.
Yes, Dave is off to Houston. Let's release
him. Just so everybody knows, I take my diesel when I go to Whole Foods. I park in the fuel efficient vehicles parking because it is actually a fuel efficient vehicle.
Dave, strictly speaking, you're just using up your own carbon footprint and also Josh's because he hasn't got one. So that's fine.
We're level. Thanks, Josh.
I'll be sending you offsets for Christmas, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's very nice.
Guys, lovely loads. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah. Sorry, Eric. What are you doing?
I'm off to Finland next week for the World.
Oh, wow. Are you doing Finnish baseball?
World Hockey.
That's Apollo.
I'm trading bat and ball for stick and puck. And so I will be doing the World Hockey Championships in Helsinki and Tampere, Finland for the next 3 weeks. But we'll keep you updated with when our next podcast shall be.
Well, it's going to be hard to follow the Canadians playoff run from Finland, but good luck.
Oh, I agree. I see what we did there.
Guys, as always, been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for asking me what I'm doing. That's it from us. It's the Johnny and Josh Show you've been listening to. We look forward to having your company sometime in the future, hopefully within the next 3 weeks. But from me, from Big Dave, from JC, from Eric, we love you. We look forward to having your company very soon. Take good care.
Hello, Joe. What do you know?
We need a hit, so here I go.
Ball one.
Hey!
Ball two.
Hey!
Strike one.
Ooh!
Strike two.
Fill that up, Byron.
Yeah!
A case of Wheaties.
Just a man and not a freak, Jolton Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio, we want you and I.
He tied the mark at 44, July the 1st, you know. Since then he's hit a good 12 more, Jolton Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio, we want you and I.
From coast to coast, that's all you'll hear of Joe, the one-man show. He's glorified the horse-hide sphere, Jolton Joe DiMaggio.
Joe, Joe DiMaggio, we want you on our side.
He'll live in baseball's Hall of Fame, he got there blow by blow. our kids will tell their kids his name, Jolton Joe DiMaggio.
We dream of Joey with the line from back. Joe, Joe DiMaggio.
We want you on our side.
Stopped our Joe one night in Cleveland. Oh, 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 goodbye, Street DiMaggio.